Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. Talk Radio 790 KABC. It is a Friday evening, and a good Friday evening to you and yours. For the first 30 minutes of this hour, we have a guest on the phone, a man that if you lived in Southern California and you've followed sports, you would recognize the name of my next guest. He is, well, when you think about the term basketball, his name is synonymous both as a coach and a former player. He was the head basketball coach at the University of California at Los Angeles, otherwise known as UCLA, from 1981 to 1984. He played at UCLA from, I think, 70 to 73, 71 to 73, 89-1 as a player, lost one game. In 2018, he was inducted into the UCLA Athletics Hall of Fame. He is also author of a brand new book entitled Role of a Lifetime, Larry Farmer and the UCLA Bruins. Larry Farmer, welcome to the Frank Sontag Show.
It's good to be with you, Frank.
Hey, I got to be honest with you. I've been in radio 36 years, and I was a little nervous introducing you.
I cannot imagine why. You're too kind.
Well, part of it is because you were such a part of history at UCLA and growing up. Of course, I used to watch 11 o'clock, Channel 5, the rebroadcast of the Bruins, and you were a large part of the destiny with Coach Wooden, et cetera. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. And you are author of a brand new book. Why a book? Talk about what led up to Role of a Lifetime.
You know, that's a great question, Frank. And, you know, I look back at the time that I spent at UCLA, getting there, as you mentioned, in the early 70s and, you know, being blessed by the opportunity to play for Coach Wooden with such great players. And my career, unlike a lot of players at UCLA, continued as the part-time assistant coach and then a full-time assistant coach, all following Coach Wooden for 6 years. And then the head coach. So I kind of overlapped both the dynasty years and then the years that that followed Coach Wooden. And it just kind of presented a very interesting look at UCLA basketball through the eyes of someone who had seen it, you know, on both sides. And I thought I had a story in me for years and just never got around to sitting down and, you know, putting pencil to paper. But once COVID hit and everybody had a lot more time on our hands than we ever would have wished for, it just seemed like a calling to finally sit down and tell that story. And you know, it's a basketball story. It's a story of perseverance and endurance. And I like to think of it because of my love for UCLA and the university and Coach Wooden and my teammates. You know, it's a love story, too. So it's a lot of things rolled into one. And I thought it would be a great story to tell if you were a basketball fan or if you just like reading a story with a good ending.
Well, and I will tell you, I could not put it down. I texted you this morning and said I finished it this morning. There are so many stories in the book. I mean, behind the scenes. And as I was kind of praying about the interview tonight, the one that really stands out, and it may not be one if you have been on a book tour or will be on a book tour, probably not one you'd be asked often, but to take over as the head coach of UCLA, in your book you captured what a grind it was for 3 years and the pressures. Can you talk about what that taught you as a man, as a leader, and as a coach?
You know, I knew what to expect because I had played at UCLA, so I certainly knew what all of the expectations were for the team. Then I was I was the assistant coach for three different head coaches, and each of those coaches were great people, hard workers, terrific coaches, and each one, you know, lasted for about 2 years. So even though, you know, at age 30, which is, I look back now, that's really young.
Yeah.
To be a head coach, certainly the head coach at UCLA, there were no surprises for me. I knew what to expect. I knew what I expected of myself. And I knew what, you know, our fans and followers, people that really enjoyed basketball, what they expected. You know, it's one thing to know what to expect, and then it's another thing when you are sitting in that seat and all of a sudden, you know, they're saying, you know, Larry Farmer, the head coach at UCLA, and that was an awesome responsibility. Many, many times, you know, you call upon your faith to kind of guide you through a lot of the ups and downs. And through that whole process, and again, you know, where the book starts and then where it finishes, you know, it was a spiritual growth for me. It was also an educational growth. I grew as a person. I grew as a leader. You know, I was confident, but yet humble. There's just so many different lessons. And I've always felt like I grew up at UCLA. I got there as an 18-year-old. And when I left, you know, I was 33. And I kind of, you know, they talk about how the presidents look when they come into office and they look one age. And then 4 years later, it looks like they've aged 25 years. Yep. That's kind of how I looked when I left UCLA at age 33.
Larry Farmer is my guest. His name is synonymous with the UCLA Bruins. Role of a Lifetime is his brand new book. I was pleasantly surprised, not that I expected anything differently, how transparent you were in the book. And not to give a whole lot away, when you decided to step down from being the head coach, what really stood out to me was, and I'm not interested in digging in the weeds at all, but I want to talk about integrity for a moment and how some of us, especially as men, I have a men's ministry. We talk a lot about integrity and leadership. How sometimes in life you're confronted with a decision where integrity may be the hardest decision to make versus something that's given to you and is easy, but you know in your heart of hearts, you have to take the road less traveled.
Yes, Frank, and you know that it for me, it was always listening to that inner voice. It was trusting my gut. You know, obviously it was a very, very difficult decision, but there was just something that just kept telling me that, you know, that at least that stage of my life, that run, that era of my life was coming to an end. And, you know, it was a bittersweet decision because I truly loved the university and the opportunity. But again, you know, you listen to that inner voice, and, you know, I would listen to it when I decided to accept the position, and I listened to it when I thought, you know, maybe this is, you know, it's time for me to step down. And years later, you know, you're never quite sure if you've done the right thing, but years later, I was convinced in looking back that it was the absolute right thing to do, and which is a part of why I think the book is so interesting, because it is transparent. And, you know, when you're writing a book, there's a certain amount of yourself that you're going to reveal. And I've always been a very private person, but yep. I thought if I was really going to tell my story and that story, there was a lot that was going to be revealed about me as a person, my character, my integrity, how I was raised. And I thought that really came through as, you know, you went through each chapter of the book. That was one thing that I really wanted to come through.
And it did come through loud and clear. It is a really, really good book, Coach. Role of a Lifetime is the name of the book. The author is Larry Farmer, as well as my guest. Since the book has been out, what kind of feedback have you gotten?
You know, it's really been positive. And you when you write something about yourself, you don't know how people are going to take it.
Yep.
But I've heard many, many comments, you know, from a human interest team building. I've heard a lot of people that were basketball fans that just they talk about how much they enjoy the feeling of being in the locker room or, you know, on the court, you know, with, you know, great players like Sidney Wicks, Bill Walton, Jamal Wilkes, or what it was like to sit and talk to Coach Wooden. So you get those kind of stories. And, you know, there's a lot of humor in the book, because even though we were playing winning championships, you know, we're just a regular group of young men who, you know, in the early 60s, we were a part of the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement. There was a lot going on in our country. And as young, bright men who all had opinions You know, Coach wouldn't always recruit guys that he felt, you know, we were people of substance. And because of that, we all looked at the world, you know, through our own eyes. And, you know, through all of those experiences, you know, we grew and came together as a team. And, you know, I just thought that, again, telling those stories would be very interesting to just a wide swath of people. And I thought there might be something in there for just about everybody.
The book is entitled Role of a Lifetime, Larry Farmer and the UCLA Bruins. We have to break, but Larry is going to stick around for another segment. The book is out at all the major outlets. LarryCFarmerJr.com is Larry's website. And I look forward to our second segment with Coach Farmer. And we will do that next here on the Frank Sontag Show, 790 KABC. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Welcome to the Frank Sontag Show. I'm blessed to say my guest is Larry Farmer. He's author of the brand new book, Role of a Lifetime, Larry Farmer and the UCLA Bruins. It is available at all the usual places. Coach, I'm not going to ask you to comment, but when you were talking about humor in the book, I couldn't help but think of Sven Nader. And people are going to have to read the book to know what that means, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, it's a great.
Sven was, well, you talk about a great teammate. I love Sven. We were all together a couple of weeks ago celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 1973 championship team. Mm, wow. And, you know, we share so many practice stories and hotel stories that, you know, after I saw him and we hugged each other, we both just start laughing because it's just, okay, which one of us is going to tell the story first or a story first? But what a great man.
Oh, my goodness. I have three questions and then anything else that's on your mind. I knew a little bit about you. I played at JUCO and we played UCLA a couple of times, the freshman team, etc. Your story about how you got to UCLA to me really spoke of sometimes in life there's intangibles. I'd like to think in part it's God when it comes to timing. Talk a bit about how you actually ended up at UCLA. It wasn't like you were highly recruited and you knew you were going.
Oh, no. And it was definitely a divine intervention. I was growing up in Denver, Colorado. I was a junior in high school, and I was not yet, it was early in my junior season, basketball season, I was not yet a starter on the varsity. So you got to picture this. Here's a kid that's, you know, that's a backup his junior year who's not yet starting on the varsity. And I had purchased all the basketball magazines at the beginning of the season. And, of course, you know, this is back in 1968. Well, UCLA and then Lou Alcindor, you're on the cover of every preseason magazine. So there was a natural curiosity about this coach and this basketball team and then this superstar player. And there was no ESPN or you know, cable TV, but UCLA was going to play Houston in what has been called for all of these years, the game of the century. Mm-hmm. It's the first time they were going to televise a game that was not an NCAA tournament game during prime time. And Houston was ranked number two in the country, UCLA number one. Houston had Elvin Hayes, an All-American. And I sat in the den with my parents, and I watched that game. And when the game ended, it was spiritual. I watched the game. UCLA lost, and I turned to my parents, still not yet a varsity player, starter, and I said, that's where I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go to UCLA. And everything had to just fall into place. I had to get better as a player. UCLA had to have a need for that position. And a year later, like a lot of out-of-state players, I reached out to UCLA through letter, and I sent a videotape. I sent my transcript. And because of the timing that UCLA received all of that information from me, a scholarship that might not have been open at the beginning of the year was open at the end of the year. And so the stars came together, everything aligned. And when Coach Wooden saw the tape and my transcript and the letter that I wrote, there was an immediate interest. So it was not an accident. It was divine intervention. And some things are meant to happen. And again, it was that little voice. When I saw UCLA play, and it was even in a losing effort, I thought to myself, that's where I'm going to go to school. And 2 years later, that's where I was.
You had a relationship with Coach Wooden for many years. The question I want to ask you, and I don't know, but I suspect you probably remember like it was yesterday. Do you remember what it was like to walk in his office when you were being recruited the first time you had a conversation with him?
Yeah. If you think you were nervous about talking to me tonight. You know, again, I'd only seen him on, you know, I saw him on television and then, you know, the basketball magazines. And, of course, I knew and heard about his reputation. And when I walked into his office the first time, I was really nervous because I didn't know what to expect. And when Coach came around and shook my hand, I immediately relaxed. You know, he was strong and firm, but yet the voice was gentle and kind. And then when we sat down and he offered me jelly beans, I know a lot of people have heard the story about Coach Wooden really being fond of jelly beans. Yeah. Well, he, in fact, had a big jar of those on his desk. And when he offered me jelly beans, I didn't take any because I was still pretty nervous. But that's what caused me to relax. And then the rest of the conversation went pretty normal. But, yes, it was very, very I remember it like it was yesterday. It was very, very touching now when I think back about, you know, how cool that was.
Yeah. Larry Farmer is my guest. His brand new book is Role of a Lifetime. And then as time goes by in the blink of an eye, in the latter days at UCLA, you played for Coach. You won 3 national championships. Anything else that stands out, and you've got a lot in the book, anything else that stands out about this man, John Wooden, who's dearly missed every day still?
Yes. You know, when we played for Coach, and he called, you know, those of us who were blessed to play for him, his boys. And, you know, he had written this pyramid of success, those 15 behaviors that, you know, if you could try to live by those and work hard at those, you got a really good chance of succeeding in whatever it is, you know, basketball, life, raising your family. And so when I played for Coach, we knew about the pyramid. You know, he wasn't bringing it out at practice and quizzing us on it. It was just something that he had done. I respected it. I thought he put a lot of work into it, but it was not anything as a player that I, you know, focused my attention on. I was, you know, busy trying to graduate and get playing time. But it was amazing. As soon as I left school and went out on my own, got into coaching, started to grow up, started to become a man with responsibilities, it was amazing about how many of those things that he had taught us every day in practice, everything that he lived. He was a perfect example of that pyramid of success. It was almost like, you know, I really didn't know what was going on around me until I grew up. And as soon as I got out into the real world, the teaching, the foundation that I had gotten at home from my parents. And then, of course, when they turned me over to Coach Wooden, the continuation of all of that, really became the foundation of who I am. You know, I was blessed to be a basketball coach for 44 years. That message, you know, anybody that I ever coached or had an opportunity to be around through basketball, they know about Coach Wooden and they know about the impact that he had on me, more so as I grew up off the court than even on.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned 44 years as a coach. Any observations about just how much the game has changed?
Well, that's a good question, Frank. You know, the athletes today are bigger, stronger, quicker, more athletic. You know, with the 3-point shot, the way the court is spread, you know, it's a fun game to watch. My one criticism of basketball today is that the players are allowed to carry the ball, put their hand on the side of the ball and change directions. And I think it gives the offense a tremendous advantage. I think oftentimes, you know, the referees could call offensive players dribbling for carrying, even if they're not in traffic. But that's just, you know, the old-fashioned me. But the game is fun to watch. And the strategy of, you know, the constant screening and rolling, you know, is difficult to defend. Back in the old days, there was a lot more movement away from the ball than there is these days. But because the game is played at such an incredible pace and these athletes are, you know, are so fast, it's fun to watch. The one thing I think that, you know, has come full circle is now you hear about players being versatile, big guys that can dribble, little guys that can post, skill players, you know, kids that can pass, dribble, do all those other things. I'm glad that that is becoming important again, and players aren't so, you know, scripted, where if you're a big guy, you can only do this. If you're a small guy, you can only do that. The versatility is coming back in the game. When I earned playing time in high school and at UCLA, it was because I could dribble, pass, and shoot. Yep. And it's good to see that that's becoming important again.
Larry Farmer is my guest. His brand new book, again, is Role of a Lifetime. You know, I look back at the 70s. I grew up. I'm a little younger than you, not much. It was really a bittersweet time, and there was something extraordinary about growing up and the legacy and the dynasty of UCLA. And for you, as a man who loves God, to be a part of that, when you look back, was that an extra bittersweet time, or do you just kind of look at it as just another moment in your life?
Yes, a very important moment in my life. You know, certainly one that while we were in the midst of it, you know, we really and truly, you know, the old adage, you know, one game at a time, you don't look ahead, you don't disrespect an opponent, but you don't fear an opponent. You know, that's really how Coach Wooden prepared us for things. And so in the midst of winning the 7 championships in a row, or when I graduated, we won 75 games in a row. Those things weren't, I didn't realize how unique that was. I didn't realize that I was in the midst of what would later be called a dynasty. Mm-hmm. I knew that if I went out every game and did my job, that our chances of being successful were far greater than the guys wearing those other uniforms.
Right.
But it wasn't until later that I really appreciated, you know, how much we separated ourselves, how unique that time of my life was. And I cherish it. You know, if I had it to do all over again, I'd do exactly the same thing.
Mm. Larry, one last question, and I have so much more. Maybe we'll have another conversation another time, but I wanted to make sure my listeners knew, if they didn't know already, that you have a brand new book out entitled Role of a Lifetime. Anything about the book that hasn't been mentioned? And I know there's a lot, and I have a lot of questions that I didn't get to, but anything else about the book or your life or UCLA or anything you want to share in closing with the listeners?
Yes, you know, I think when the average person that either, you know, will like the book because it's a good story, or if they're attracted to the book because of, you know, the UCLA basketball dynasty, there is so much more in the book about a lot of the people that you've
yep.
seen play basketball on TV or heard, you know, are heard about because of their celebrity. And I think you hear a lot of personal interest stories. I tell a lot of stories about these people that, you know, a lot of our fans are you know, they just wouldn't know these things. And I think it really puts some insight into who a lot of my teammates were as people. Great people, great players, but I give a little bit of a different look as to who they were and what they were to me, and what we were as a group and a team. And, you know, I think what really bears that out is we've had these reunions 50 years later to celebrate the championship years. And Coach is gone, but he's always very much a part of these reunions.
Yeah.
But the two I've been able to come to, every living member of each team has been there. And that just shows you the bond, the brotherhood that all those many years ago, you know, started on a basketball court. 50 years later, nothing's changed between the way we all feel about each other.
Mm, that's so good. Larry Farmer is the author of the brand new book entitled Role of a Lifetime, Larry Farmer and the UCLA Bruins. Again, you can get it at all the usual places. LarryCFarmerJr.com is his website. Coach, it was an honor and a blessing to spend a few moments with you. God bless you. Good luck on the book. And we'll look forward to speaking with you again sometime on the radio program.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you. God bless you. And I really enjoyed this. We have to do it again.
I look forward to that. Have a good night, Coach.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Thank you. We will continue with more of this, the Frank Sontag Show on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Welcome to the Frank Sontag Show. You know, I have to say this. For anyone that grew up watching UCLA basketball, we have fond memories. I mean, I graduated high school in 1972. I played a little college ball. And when I heard that Larry had written a book, we have some mutual friends. I just had to get the book immediately. And I just want to say this. He's long gone. He doesn't know what I'm saying. But I have to tell you, I've read a lot of sports books. And most of them are okay. Most of them are a little dry. But there's something about Larry's book, Role of a Lifetime. And he alluded to it in the interview. It's not only a behind-the-scenes look of UCLA basketball in the 70s, but the storytelling and the people that you get to know, it just, again, I couldn't put the book down. My wife is out of town with my son for a few days, and so all of the household responsibilities and all that, I just literally yesterday sat on the couch and read for about 6 hours just to power through the book. And it's a great book, Role of a Lifetime, Larry Farmer and the UCLA Bruins. The numbers to call are 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC. Would love to hear from you tonight on anything and everything, and the phone lines are open. Speaking of the UCLA Bruins, I saw this story a few days ago, and I wanted to share with you. I've never met Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in person. But there was a story that was leaked on, I believe this is Twitter. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sold his 4 championship rings, 3 MVP trophies, and other memorabilia for $2.8 million. Now, before I tell you the end of the story, I shared the story with a couple of people without telling them the end, and they all had the same thing. Oh, I can't believe he sold his memorabilia. Why? Proceeds going to a youth education program. This is what Kareem said. When it comes to choosing between storing a championship ring or trophy in a room or providing kids with an opportunity to change their lives, the choice is pretty simple. Sell it all. End quote. That's just phenomenal. And I know Coach Farmer in his book, he has a photo of his 3 championship rings and some other stuff. And these are prized possessions. But it says a lot about the character of Kareem. Selling his rings, his trophies, other memorabilia, and donates $2.8 million to a youth education program. Man, we should also learn from that example, no doubt. 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC. How are you? I hope you're well. Phone lines are wide open. You'll talk to Adam when you call in the program. He's the man you speak with before you get on the air. And Wayman always is in master controls. He is responsible for flying the airplane, if you will. What's on your mind tonight? How are you? I'm actually in a interesting place. I hesitate to do this. This is a breaking a rule in radio, and this is kind of taboo, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm just sitting here thinking how much I love this medium. And I'm in a season in life where I want to lean into radio with everything I have. And we'll see. I don't know what is to come. I love this radio station, but we never know what the next day will hold. But all that to say this, right now in LA Talk Radio, as we speak, I am simultaneously on 2 stations. I'm on this station. This is live. And I was asked earlier today to speak on another station. My good friend Carl Jackson is sitting in for Brandon Tatum. on AM 870, The Answer. And right now, that interview is also on the radio. I just had a good friend text me, hey, I'm listening to you on two stations. So I love this medium. And I've not always loved this medium. I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with radio. I fell into it in 1985. Save a stint here and there where I was off the air. I've been on the air ever since. And I think I've learned a lot about myself, about people, about the medium of communication. And I am humbled and grateful to be on this radio station. This is the first talk radio station in Los Angeles. I grew up listening to KABC. And to be a part of this now is, it's just a blessing and a thrill. So thank you for listening to this program. Also, if you're new, we have an email address. If you don't necessarily want to call in, email address is frank@kmgministries.com. That is my ministry email address. It comes directly to me. If you want to communicate something, share something. I always love when I get emails from people that don't like me. Not that I'm a masochist or anything, but I just find their insights and the reason for not liking me fascinating. Like, people draw conclusions. I've read studies where, I don't know the exact timeline now, but supposedly within, 7 seconds, when we meet somebody, our brains kind of do a scan up and down, and we make instant decisions about who we think they are. And I do, on this radio station, a two-hour program, and people can listen for 5 minutes, and they think they know what I'm about, and I'm just fascinated by that. I, over the years, have changed my positions about a lot of things. I've learned a lot about myself. When I first started in talk radio in 1987, I took over from a guy that was on the air for 10 years. Back then, similar to now, you can be on the radio one moment and the next thing, your favorite host is gone, no final show, no reasons why. But the man that I took over for, he was on for 10 years, and because of deregulation, he was let go because he did the afternoon news full-time on KLOS at the time. And so I inherited his radio program, and I thought that I really wanted to do talk radio. And I have to tell you, for the first year, and I think I wrote it in my book, the first year that all I got on the air was, I don't like you, where's the other guy? Night in and night out, that's all I heard. And I had to make a decision at one point. And it was really good because, I'll speak for myself. I've learned through the medium of talk radio that ego is the death knell. If I get on the air and I think I'm all that in a bag of chips, and I know there's some people that have been successful at it, that's not the way God wired me. And so early on, I was confronted with the reality, do I want to keep doing this? Because I got beat up, ego took a bruising. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. In fact, let me share this very quick story, and then we'll come back with calls, and I've got a lot to cover in the remaining moments of the program. I dropped out of college because I was terrified to take a speech class. Twice I dropped out. And I remember like it was yesterday, when I took over the radio program, I just had the sense that I was going to do a public speaking engagement for people that listen to the program. And so I rented a local auditorium. I made the announcement on the program for a few weeks running. I had just begun being a new age teacher, so there was a little bit of an interest in what I did. And the very first, I called it a lecture. Now, I shouldn't have called it a lecture in hindsight. Lecture is kind of like, not great connotations. But the first lecture I called, 13 people showed up. I don't think I've told this story on the air. And I was so undone, so nervous, I thought, what if I freeze? So I brought books. I thought, if I freeze on stage, I'll just read from a book. I literally had a stack of books under my arm. Oh, my gosh. So I begin, 13 people in the auditorium. And I'm struggling, and I'm trying to push through, and I'm sharing some things. And there's a woman in the second row, and she kept shaking her head. And it was very distracting. And finally, it kept breaking my train of concentration. I finally said to her, "Are you okay?" And she said, "No." She said, "Every time I look at you, I can't believe you look like what you do. I look away. It's you because I listen to your program. But when I look at you, you don't look like the way I thought you would." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry." And then somebody else said, "By the way, who are you?" 10 of the 13 people were in the wrong auditorium. They were supposed to be above the library to a lecture with somebody else. And I said, "I would never do another speaking engagement again." Well, fast forward a few years later, here I am still doing talk radio, still doing public talks, not lectures, talks. And call it all just a part of life and a learning experience. 800-222-5222. 800-222-KABC. We will continue with more of this, the Frank Sontag Show on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I tried to be a righteous man. I try to give love all over the world, but I'm tired of being used.
Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Jeff, Genevieve, and Latrice, thank you for the nice emails. My email address is frank@kmgministries.com. Let me remind you about one of our sponsors. Dan Johnson is one of the founders of Berglund and Johnson Law Group. Berglund and Johnson has been fighting for those who've suffered life-changing injuries, tragically, even some in the case of death, because of negligence or wrongful acts of others. They've been doing this for over 40 years. I'm grateful that they've come alongside, made this program possible. If you've been seriously injured, call Berglund and Johnson, even for a free evaluation, maybe a second opinion regarding your case. It costs you nothing to find out if they can help you, and you will never pay 1 cent unless they win your case. Call them at 1-800-4-IF-HURT, 800-4 and the words if hurt, the Berglund and Johnson Law Group. Coming up next hour, if you want inclusion, I've got a list. Wait you hear this and who wrote it. Also, there's another NHL goalie that says no to NHL Pride Night. And some other stories as well. But let me talk to Harry in South Pasadena. Harry, you're on 790 KABC on the Frank Sontag Show. Hello, Harry.
Good evening. I don't know if you can bilocate or not, but I've just heard your voice on another station. I recognize the voice. And during your interview with the individual, you spoke about a spiritual experience you'd had. I think it was in November 17th. I forget what year it was. I'm very interested in, you said a voice spoke to you. I'm very interested in your spiritual experience because I'm not a person who can grasp this thing by faith. I've been looking for a connection, something that grounds me and makes me really say, hey, this is a real deal. Could you expound on that?
I can, and I'll give you a little bit of a pretext to it. The story I'm about to tell, if I would have known then what I experienced after this and where I am now, I would have never believed it in 1,000 years. So let me share the story.
Awesome.
And let's put you back on hold so you can listen. And I have a few moments. In fact, last week I was asked to speak to a group of people, an organization I never met, talk about public speaking. And so it gave me an opportunity to share a little bit of my story. And 1984, June 17th of 1984, I bought a motorcycle. I was a young guy struggling in my life, raised in Catholicism, walked away from the church, said I had it with religion, went out in the world and just, you know, was living for me, bought a motorcycle. And June 17th of 1984, Harry, if you're listening, I was coming back from then Hollywood Park, a racetrack. And I had a woman on the back of the motorcycle with me, a woman I was seeing at the time. And we descended into the San Fernando Valley, went on the Ventura Freeway, coming up on the Balboa exit. That's either west or north, the 101. I never get that straight. I looked in my mirror to make a lane change, and all I saw was a car barreling up on us. We had no helmets on, and I remember thinking, this is it. It was a Sunday. I woke up that Sunday morning with not a thought in my head that it was the last day of my life. And so I watched this car rear-end us. I went out. The woman I was seeing went up. She was hurt very badly. I tried to break my fall. I was thrown 90 feet. And road burns, cut up. Anyway, I'm obviously here to talk about the story. California Highway Patrol estimated that on impact we were hit at 110 miles an hour. This guy had leased a Corvette. It was one of the first years of the new Corvette. And that part of the freeway, if you ever drive in that area of the valley, it kind of does a little hairpin and then it's a long straightaway. He just gunned it and didn't even see us till the last minute. So that began my quest for the meaning of life. And I wrote a book called Light the Way Home. FrankSontag.com is the website. It's all in the book. And I want to get to exactly the life-changing moment after that. So I sold everything I had. I moved to the west side of Lake Tahoe in the middle of winter. Not a good decision. Just trying to figure out what happened. I had survivor's guilt. Praise God, the woman on the bike survived, but she had to have brain surgeries. It was not good. And me, I had a lot of external injuries, no broken bones, but my psyche was really jacked up. So spent a cold winter in Tahoe, came back to L.A., fell into radio, trying to find the meaning of life and who was I, why was I here, fell into the new age and became a new age teacher for 21 years. Took over a radio program. I alluded to that. Spoke in front of thousands of people, spiritual but not religious, and really thought that I had discovered my niche in life. And I did that all the way up until 2009. And the point I want to make now, because I don't want to rush through this. In 2009, by all circumstances, my life was good. I had just been remarried, wonderful woman. My son was a year and a half old, was in radio. We bought a house. You know, I had all the accoutrements of life. I wasn't struggling with substance. I didn't hit rock bottom, none of that stuff. But in 2009, let's just say there was just something missing in life, other than success and notoriety and all that stuff. So my best friend had given his life to Christ in 2006. He and his older brother was a pastor. They invited me to play golf one day. It was actually December the 17th, 2009. And we played golf. We went to lunch. And Harry, they just hammered me. They just hammered me upside down for 2 hours. And I took it because I knew they loved me. And then they got to a point where, and you probably know this, especially if you're not a Christian, you may have met a Christian and they kind of put you on the hot seat and they're like, well, like they expected me to say, I'm all in. Yes, I'm all in for Jesus. And I said, if that works for you, great, but I'm a spiritual teacher. I'm good. You know, Jesus and me in New Age, Jesus is acknowledged but relativized as just one of many spiritual teachers, like the Buddha, Muhammad, all that stuff. I read a lot of spiritual books, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, the Upanishads. Never read a Bible. Stayed away from the Bible, interestingly enough. And just kind of did my thing up to that point. And then on this fateful day, Pastor Dale said to me, hey, if you don't make it home, like you shouldn't have made it home 25 years previously on that motorcycle, are you right with God? And I was angry. I was offended. I'm thinking, of course I'm right with God. LA Times just did a front page piece on me. I was a New Age guru. I was famous, blah, 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 spiritual, talked about love. But there was something about him saying, you shouldn't have made it 25 years ago. If you don't make it home today, are you right with God? And so I'm going to pick up the story on the other side because we've got to go to a break. So what happened to me in that moment that changed my life forever? I'll share that story in a moment. Again, Harry, I appreciate the opportunity. And anybody listening, phone lines are open, 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC. We will begin hour number two on the other side. Thank you for listening to this, the Frank Sontag Show on Talk Radio 790 KABC.